no helicopters have been procured for me to go to golf course. Thank you.
I've never said he wasn't a great politician. I'm just saying he's a
off. He's listening to you.
How'd you play out there today?
Well, I found the conditions challenging, mostly because there's no grass on the golf course.
But there never has been.
I'm thinking about the swag bag. I have the swag bag.
When you got three crevices on the green, your course is trash.
What's happening, folks? Welcome back to the Beltway Golfer Podcast. This is episode 89. I'm your host, Alex Dixon. Two podcasts in one weekend, both designed in a way to accompany the U.S. Adaptive Open that's happening in the D.C. area this week, taking place in Rockville, Maryland at Woodmont Country Club South Course. If you didn't listen to the podcast yesterday, episode 88 with the course architect, Mr. Joel Wyman, give that a listen. Today's podcast is with one of the competitors and a local DMV native, Mr. Ford Martin. Ford grew up in this area, has deep roots to Montgomery County, Maryland, although he lives in Tennessee now, played lacrosse at Georgetown Prep, grew up playing golf at Congressional, tells us all about his journey in, you know, his impairment, becoming an adaptive golfer, his journey from junior golf into lacrosse, back to golf, picking up adaptive golf, and then what's just happened recently in the last couple of years and already picking up a couple wins and is now a top 10 adaptive golfer in the world. So got a shot to win this week. We'll be pulling for him. It was great to chat with Ford, get to know his story a little bit and kind of get to hear what he's all about. We'll get to the conversation. Just a reminder, if this is your first time listening to the podcast, head over to beltwaygolfer.com, sign up for our free monthly newsletter all about golf in the capital region of the DMV. Just submit your email. It's free. And give us a follow on Instagram and other social media at Beltway Golfer. But let's go to the conversation, episode 89 with Mr. Ford Martin. Enjoy. All right. Welcome to the Beltway Golfer Podcast, Mr. Ford Martin. How are you doing this morning?
Thanks so much for having me on, Alex. I'm doing great. It was fantastic to meet you at Woodmont on Monday at Media Day. Thanks for coming out and supporting.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I'm not sure what day this podcast will be posted, but likely the day or two before the 2025 U.S. Adaptive Open at Woodmont Country Club on the South Course, which will be your second Adaptive Open, right?
Correct. My first Adaptive Open happened really quick last year in terms of finding out that I could be physically eligible to play adaptive golf. And last year was the first year they had qualifying for the U.S. Open in Kansas at Sand Creek Station. I went down, I saw, after some encouragement from my friends, they said I should see if I physically qualify. I went down and saw the head assessor in Atlanta. I'm living in Nashville now, but the whole 3-hour drive down to Atlanta, I was thinking to myself, this guy's going to see me swing a club 118 miles an hour and be like, get out of here. But he had me doing some balance exercise with my orthotics that I wear on my legs. And within 10 minutes, he was like, you 100% qualify. At first, he said I would be in the lower leg impairment category, but since it is neurogenic, I was born with neurogenic club feet. I've been in the neurological impairment category, which this year has been changed to the coordination impairment category.
Interesting.
I got the world ranking for golfers with a disability card last February 2024. And then I signed up for the first available qualifier closest to me, which was in Atlanta at the Bobby Jones course, the Magnolia routing. It was a little odd because you played the same 9 holes twice in a row, but it was a good time to have my first bogey-free round and shot 5 under, won the qualifier there. And
wow.
Went out to Kansas, and it's all been a great experience. I know it's been a little bit chaotic, but nothing but good things to say about the whole experience.
So a lot of questions. So let's start with that process of, does everybody who becomes an adaptive or there's multiple usages of the word qualifies, but mm-hmm. qualifies to be an actual adaptive golfer, that process of where your impairment qualifies you to participate in these events. Does everybody kind of have to go through that process where they go see somebody in person and kind of they get an assessment of some kind of their impairment?
You know, it really depends. You first start the process, you need to submit a letter from your doctor. And my doctor submitted a letter, said my orthopedist, actually, who fused my ankles. I've had four surgeries on both ankles, the last of which was when I was in fourth grade. So it's been a while. So submitted a letter from my doctor. And there are a few assessors that are qualified by the USGA to assess to play in competition. Throughout the U.S., the closest of which to me was in Atlanta, and we did try to hop on a Zoom call with my physical therapist in Nashville, but it was a loud room, open physical therapist's office with a lot of other people getting treatment in Nashville. So the physical assessor in Atlanta said he would have to see me in person. And so that's when I went down to Atlanta and was assessed. You know, there are so many things in the adaptive golf community that consider everybody's impairment. You know, there's so many different impairment categories. So I'm not sure specifically what the process is for, let's say, the arm impairment or other impairments. But in my case, I had to send a letter from my doctor, which I think everybody has to do. And then I went and saw an assessor in person. And by the time I got back from Atlanta to Nashville in the car, I had an email with my pass number, EDGA. There are a lot of acronyms in the adaptive golf world and in the world in general, but the it's actually the European system that is the EDGA, which stands for, I'm trying to look it up what it stands for.
I was on their website earlier today, actually, when I was doing some research on this. Uh-huh. I didn't catch what the acronym actually stood for, but I was looking at the process.
Yeah, by the time I got home, I had a WR4GD pass number, which I enter every time I register for an adaptive tournament. So that's been cool. And also,
and the WR4GD, I did see that's World Ranking for Disabled Golfers.
Correct. And the DP World Tour works a lot with I think they're working and signed a contract with the World Rankings for Golfers with a Disability. And the DP World Tour does something really cool. I'd say 8 stops on the DP World Tour. They hold an adaptive tournament on the Monday and Tuesday of the DP World Tour tournament. So it's at the same course. So a lot of very cool courses, and the whole build out is at the course. So it's really cool. I'm hoping to play in one of those here soon.
Very cool. So to your situation specifically, so your impairment is bilateral neurogenic club foot.
Correct.
Could you explain to listeners a little more specifically what that means?
Sure, absolutely. The way my parents tell the story is when I was born, my feet were turned sideways and the bottoms of my feet were facing each other. So when I was younger, my parents brought me all over the country to try to find a doctor to see what was the best way forward in terms of surgeries. There were discussions about putting bolts in my ankles. And also what we ended up going with is surgically fusing the bones in my ankles. So the neurogenic part is interesting as well. It's not just your typical club foot, but the muscles below my knee don't fire. Below my knee, the muscles, tibia, fibia, are pretty much non-existent. And my lower leg is very thin. But when I was in fourth grade, I had my last surgery. They would do one foot at a time so I could get around on crutches and be somewhat mobile there in middle school. I became a pro on the crutches. And they fused the calcaneus, navicular, and talus in both of my feet. It's called a triple arthrodesis. And basically through the surgeries, the bones naturally fuse together. So there's no metal in my feet. It's just bones that, as I grew, they fused together. And I know a big part of planning the surgeries was to make sure I hit a certain point in my growth plate so that they didn't fuse the bones before the bones stopped growing as big as they would get. So I wear orthotics on both legs, Actually, these ones I'm wearing now are the least cumbersome I've ever had. I remember going into the back of my closet. We were moving when I was a freshman in high school from just a few miles away from one house in Maryland to the other. And I found this huge bag of old orthotics I used to wear. And I didn't remember them, but I had the full-on Forrest Gumps where it was a big leather, almost like weightlifting belt that would come up and strap around my waist. And then there were metal joints that went all the way down outside the back of my legs. And I've been through every type of orthotic AFO brace for my lower legs that you can imagine. And I am most likely, a lot of people at the orthotics, Hanger Orthotics, who does mine now, they say I go through them quicker than anybody they've ever seen. I've broken multiple orthotics. I brought a backup set up here for the adaptive open in case I break the ones that I'm using now.
So is the idea from that surgery that the fusion of those ankle bones essentially corrects the positioning of your feet, and then the orthotics are a stabilizer to so it doesn't...
Correct.
Try to, got it.
Spot on. I have a pretty bad drop foot now that my ankles are fused. I can feel everything below my knee and in my feet, very sensitive in my feet. But if I don't wear my orthotics, and I take them off when I get home and walk around the house without them, but I have to be aware to pick up my feet a little bit more. And it's all from the hip. Like I have no ankle flexion to walk heel to toe. So if I'm a lot of times I've been carrying something around the house and not paying attention, and I'll trip over my own toes. So I've gotten pretty good at catching myself, but even like I'll go hike the Billy Goat Trail with my brother, and you know, there's so many roots that pop up, and you got to stay aware or else I'll catch one of them and take a little tumble.
There's a solid local reference there.
Yeah.
So I saw you on, we didn't play together or anything, but I saw you on the range. So I can vouch for what looked like 118 clubhead, mile-per-hour clubhead speed. You could really move the ball. So if your muscles aren't firing below your knee, how are you generating that kind of speed?
You know, I've always had distance, which is surprising to a lot of people. I have always found a way to send the ball pretty far. I grew up doing the junior golf program at Congressional. Shout out Stacy Miller Arndt. She's the best. She runs the program over there. And I remember I'm the youngest of seven children as well. And by the time it got to me to take part in the junior golf program in Congressional, I had a smorgasbord of leftover sticks from my older siblings who didn't continue. So I had a persimmon driver, a persimmon three wood, some blade five iron, an eight iron, a pitching wedge, and a Titleist bullseye putter. And junior golf at Congressional, you would carry your own bag. So you started at three holers and went to five holers, then 9 and 18. And I remember there was some concern. I don't know if I was concerned, but when I made the jump from 9 holers to 18 holers, there was some concern if I'd be able to get around carrying my own bag. And to answer your question about the speed, and it just is, I think, an overwhelming consensus in most aspects of my life, is I've just found a way. I do get pretty bad tightness in my lower back. So my wife will tell you that I'm the person that stretches the most in the world. I'm constantly when we're watching TV, down on the floor, stretching and all that. But I think, you know, I'm biased. Obviously, there are some drawbacks on uneven lies and everything, not being able to have the ankle flexion to adjust to lies sometime, or, you know, they talk about ground force reaction and players jumping. My vert is pretty low, I will admit, but...
So is mine, but I don't have a good excuse. Go ahead.
Ever since I can remember, I just thought it was normal. Every time I would leave the range, and I would love just banging drivers on the range. People at Congressional will tell you, when I was younger, not many clubs came out of my bag except driver. And every time I would leave the range spot, there'd be divots where my feet were. So I was always able to use the ground really well. And I'm not sure kinematically, biomedically, what, why I think that benefits me. But I think I'm able to use the ground with a lot more of my weight than people would expect.
Yeah, that's interesting. You'd think there'd be Or there might be something in there, you know, where the muscles or the pieces that you lack, maybe in some backwards way, are actually helping you with your connection to the ground. Who knows?
Right.
That's really interesting. So you've already touched on a couple pieces there locally. Let's go to your upbringing. You mentioned that you played junior golf and you're a part of the program at Congressional. So you currently live, you're talking to us right now from Tennessee, right? But you're a native of the D.C. area, of Potomac, Maryland.
Right now, I'm in Maryland. I'm at my parents' house in Avenel.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yes. So I was invited to media day on Monday, the Monday prior of the U.S. Open at Woodmont. And I was going to drive up to from Nashville probably around the 2nd or 3rd of July to get in town for some practice rounds at Woodmont. But I can work, for the most part, pretty much from anywhere. And I have great colleagues and they recognize how big a deal the Adaptive Open is. So when I got invited to Media Day, I drove up this past weekend with my brother as my co-pilot. He was down visiting in Nashville and we got in on Sunday before Media Day. But was able to play the blue course on Sunday afternoon with a couple guys from the USGA. And come to media day on Monday. I do live in Nashville. I grew up here, went to high school here, and went to Vanderbilt University in Nashville. I transferred to as a sophomore. I went to Trinity College in Connecticut my freshman year. And Vanderbilt was the only place I applied to not to play lacrosse. I was a lacrosse goalie at Georgetown Prep here in Maryland. And Vanderbilt, one of my sisters was a senior when I was a freshman, so I had a great time. And Vanderbilt was the first place I found out I got into. And I went down to visit Nashville for the first time, and I turned on the Broadway in a rental car with my mom, and it was out of a movie. I was at a red light on Broadway on 3rd, and, you know, all the beautiful people in the honky-tonks having a good time. It really doesn't compare to Hartford, Connecticut. And then a turquoise 1960s Ford pulls up to me at the red light to turn left. And I look and it's Jack White in an all three-piece black suit with a black top hat and shades. I was like, Mr. White. And he's like, what's up, man? I was like, all right, this place is pretty sweet. So long story short, ended up going to Nashville and Vanderbilt. And in one of my first semester classes, I was seated next to a senior on the women's lacrosse team. And we got to talking about how the goalies on the team never got really individual attention. And I was a goalie at Georgetown Prep. And I came on as an undergrad assistant for the Vanderbilt women's lacrosse team, focusing on goalies. And then so I did that for 2 years and then 2 years, full-time after I graduated from Vanderbilt. So I was down in Nashville from 2012 to 2018 and then came back up here to Maryland, to start a career in construction, development, which is what I'm currently doing. You'll like this. After lacrosse ended and coaching lacrosse, I'm a borderline psychopath competitive person. I'm extremely competitive and I just needed something to help quell that competitiveness fire. And like I said earlier, I've always been able to hit it far. But I made a point of, I was working construction in Tyson's Corner. I actually helped build the Capital One's headquarters in Tyson's. But I was clocking into the site at 6:30, 6 o'clock, and I could clock out at 3 or 3:30. So I bought myself a new putter. I bought myself a TaylorMade Spyder X in 2018, and I bought Bob Rotella's Putting Out of Your Mind. And I made a point to go and practice putting every day after I clocked out at Congressional. And I was fortunate to be hanging around a mid to high single digit handicap when I was still coaching lacrosse and playing lacrosse. But it turns out practicing your short game is good for you. So I was able to get down to a scratch and now a plus golfer.
Yeah, that was kind of be my next question. But first, I do have to note that's kind of hilarious, the Jack White story. I have a really good friend who lived in Nashville for a few years, and his first celebrity sighting in Nashville at a kid's playground whose kid was also at the same playground was Jack White. So I guess
no way.
I guess that's maybe that's everybody's Nashville experience is running.
It's crazy. Yeah, I've had to learn to let the artists and celebrities be when I see them. I was a fangirl at first. When I'd see people, I'd be like, oh my gosh, like, hi, can I get a photo? But I need to be chiller now that I'm a Nashville native. And that's what they expect, I think.
So back to the golf, though. So, I mean, you participated in the junior program at Congressional. So you were clearly a golfer. Did you golf? It sounds like golf took a backseat to lacrosse for your teenage years. Is that fair?
Definitely. You know, as well as anybody, lacrosse in Maryland is like football in Texas. Grew up worshiping the Georgetown Prep lacrosse team. My two older brothers, Chase and Ross, went to prep and played lacrosse there. And that was, I'd say, the height of, I remember Chase, who graduated in 2003 from Georgetown Prep. He was one of the first teams to beat Landon. And that rivalry, just going as a young kid and seeing all the people surrounding the old grass field at Landon with just a little string of rope to stop them from going onto the field, and how rowdy everybody was. I was like, I want to do this. And it turns out that the best way to be able to hang out and play with my brothers when they were practicing lacrosse in the backyard was to put a helmet on and hop in goal. I was taking heavy heat from a young age, but that's how I turned into a goalie. And yeah, lacrosse was my first love. I remember I went to Norwood Middle School right across from Congressional, and lacrosse at Georgetown Prep would take pretty much your entire year, except for a few months in the summer. So you'd have fall ball, spring ball, and then go on playing recruiting tournaments during the summer. And my dad and I would sign up for, it used to be I don't know if it's still around. I don't think so. It was a Plantation Junior Golf Tour, which was in the area. I would go and play in these Plantation Junior Golf tournaments with not being ready. And I remember vividly, it's a core memory. I was to the right of a green on a par 5 and 2. And then I should have been an easy up and down birdie. And I duffed my chip and it came right back to me, sat in my own divot. And I remember thinking to myself, why am I out here? Like, lacrosse is my sport. Like, I'm a lacrosse player. But it's funny how things work out. One of the really cool things I get to do is, I was a starting goalie for Georgetown Prep for 2 years. We won an IEC title and were co-IEC champions 1 year, top 10 in the country each year. And at the end of my senior year, head coach at the time, Kevin Giblin, we were at the awards banquet. You usually get the offensive defensive MVP. And the last award he gave out was the Ford Martin Award. And it was a little, I didn't know what was going on. It's a little odd to receive an award in your name, but it's the Ford Martin Award for courage and perseverance in the face of adversity. And that was because I really didn't want to let my teammates down when I was playing at prep. So I did all the workouts, all the runs, all the biscuits, which were a favorite of ours. A biscuit is just a suicide on a lacrosse field. So
got it.
From the end line to the restraining line back, midline back, and so forth. So I would finish last all of the time, but I did everything. And that really, I think, made me mentally tough. I just something in me put the excuses in a locker and just shoved them away. So I wanted to
gotta be incredibly inspirational for your teammates to see you doing that every practice as well in every game.
Yeah, I think so. And I just didn't want to let my teammates down. So I did everything and started 43 straight games for prep. And one of the coolest things I get to do is every year there have been two head coaches since Coach Giblin. Scott Urich is the head coach now, and they've continued awarding the Ford Martin Award. So every May I go and try to present my award to a graduating senior on the lacrosse team, which is awesome to do.
Man, that's awesome. That is really cool. So yeah, that's great. So you bringing it back to golf once more. So you become a professional. You're in the construction world. You're practicing your putting at Congressional. But unless I have it wrong, you've only been an official adaptive golfer for a couple of years now. So you know, you became re-obsessed with golf well before you were even aware of adaptive golf. Or am I wrong there?
No, you're spot on. Like I said, I started working construction back here in DC, and I need something to prepare for to motivate me to get out to practice and to get to the gym. And that quickly turned into the Congressional Club Championship. So I was playing as much as I could. And in April of 2022, my wife and I moved back down to Nashville before our wedding. I got into development, and that was around the times interest rates went up. So development work was slow, and I would go and play these munis in Nashville. I had to, which was great for my game because I was always a range rat at Congressional, and I would play these munis in Nashville, and I realized I could score, which at Congressional is hard to do. My confidence skyrocketed playing these munis in Nashville, and I started really becoming a sicko about competing in the Congressional Club Championship. In 2022, I made it to the semifinals. It's match play. So on Friday, you have to qualify stroke play on the goal course for the men's championship flight. And then Saturday and Sunday are match play. So I made it to the semifinals of match play in 2022, ended up losing. But after that, I work slowed down a little bit. I was able to get out and play a little bit more. And I was really, the first time in my life, I would go and play instead of practice. And I think that was hugely beneficial for me. You know, getting used, growing up here, it's everything's bent, but getting used to the Bermuda grass down there was a challenge. I just really dove into figuring out what works for me and figuring out how to get the ball in the hole, and came up here for the club championship in 2023 at Congressional. Won the qualifier on Friday. Actually tied, was co-medalist for the qualifier on Friday, and then just had one of those weeks where everything clicked. I was making long putts and won the Congressional Club Championship in October of 2023. It's even, the U.S. Open Adaptive coming up in about a week.
But I imagine the Congressional Club Championship, there's not a bunch of slouches out there. They got some serious players at Congressional. So yes. That was not an easy win.
No, and that was my Super Bowl at the time. And I hadn't signed up for many amateur events, but I was really dialed on trying to compete as much as I can in the Congressional Club Championship to get my name on the board that you walk through in the hallway. And I was able to do that. And my coach at Congressional, John Scott Rattan, he's the best. He's gotten a lot of love lately working with Max Homa. And he actually coached an adaptive golfer from the area, Jack Bonifant, who played at JMU. And
both of those gentlemen have been on this podcast.
Nice. Yeah. And I remember listening to JSRs, and John Scott said after I won the club championship at Congressional, he was like, don't take this the wrong way, but have you ever thought of competing in adaptive golf and trying to play in the adaptive US Open? And a couple other people mentioned it to me that week. So I reached out. There's a Congressional member who works for the USGA. He's actually head of the USGA Hall of Fame right now, Mike Trostel. Shout out, Mike. And I reached out to him, and his response was hilarious. He's like, congrats on winning the club championship. I don't think you'll qualify for the adaptive US Open though, physically, because I wear pants all the time when I golf. And I think that goes back to in high school, I was a sweatpants goalie. Because my coach didn't want people taking swings or diving at my legs. So I wore sweatpants playing lacrosse goalie, which is somewhat common.
Is he implying almost that you don't look impaired enough?
Correct, because I only wore pants.
Because you wear pants, right?
He had never seen my legs. But then I replied back to him about my neurogenic club feet, and he was like, oh my gosh, incredible. And he connected me to Stephanie Perel at the USGA. And that's what got the ball rolling to go down and get assessed in Atlanta and started this whole journey. So only been a little bit more than a year. The qualifier for last year's Adaptive Open in Kansas was last April. And ever since it was wrong in hindsight, but I was in preparing for the U.S. Adaptive Open in Kansas. The first 2 years it had been at Pinehurst, And I was looking at the winning scores at Pinehurst, and I think it was one under and two under the first 2 years. So I went into the U.S. Open in Kansas just thinking if I was around even par, I had a good shot after a day or two. But turns out I wasn't familiar with the course they were playing in Pinehurst. Guys went low last year in Kansas. I think Kit Poppert, the number one adapted player in the world, shot 7 under the first day, and I shot 3 over. And then my best friend, who's actually Landon Guy, we went to arch enemy high schools, but we went to Norwood together. He was caddying for me in Kansas. And on the second day, we made the turn, and I saw him looking at his phone, and I was like, oh no, is he checking earlier flights in case we don't make the cut? Because there's a cut after 2 days. And it was the only time I asked. I was like, how many do we need on this back nine on Tuesday to make the cut? And he said, you need two, at least two. So that was on the 10th fairway. We had started on 10, so the first fairway. And I ended up shooting 32 on that back nine to get me back to 1 over for the week and making the cut. And then the last day, last Wednesday in Kansas, I shot a 66 to finish T for fifth and the top American, which was very cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's super proud. So that's one of the two ways you qualified into this year, right? The top five and ties gets a return invite to the 2025 adaptive.
Correct. So I didn't have to qualify this year. I was exempt.
Yeah, that's awesome. I looked it up. Just for anybody listening, Ford, your game is no joke. You already kind of alluded to the fact that you're a plus one or plus two golfer. But going back to the WR4GD, the world ranking for disabled golfers or golfers with a disability, you're currently ranked 8th in the world. Is that right?
And then the first or second
ranked American?
That's correct. Second ranked American. So at the U.S. Open last year, that was my only idea of adaptive golf as a whole. But I'd see these guys and met a couple friends, and they would have swag from different adaptive tournaments and asking me what tournament I'm playing next. So after that U.S. Open in Kansas last year, I kind of dove in. And there is a good calendar for adaptive golf. More and more tournaments are being added to the schedule. And it's usually the state golf association that's holding the state adaptive open. So I learned at the U.S. Open, I needed at least 5 rounds in adaptive tournaments to get on the world rankings. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Let's see if any tournaments line up on the weekends where I can make them. So I actually was up here for my dad's birthday after the U.S. Open last year, and there was a tournament at the Omni Bedford. So I took my brother's car, drove up to the Omni Bedford for a 2-day tournament, and shot 3 over the first day, but shot 3 under the second day, finished even, and won that. And I debuted at number 17 in the world after that tournament, which is cool to see. And then I played in another tournament last year in South Carolina, finished 2nd, and I assumed I didn't even want to look because I assumed I would be somewhere near 25, 30 after not winning that tournament. My wife looked and she was like, you're up to number 7. And I was like, oh, did not expect that. But it takes all your scores throughout the adaptive tournaments you play in, and there's some sort of weighted average. I'm not sure how it worked. So I played in two tournaments after U.S. Open last year. And then last tournament last year, I won the Arizona Adaptive Open in December, which was pretty cool. Yeah.
As more and more adaptive kind of regional events pop up, are some of these becoming, is there becoming more of a network of these where they become qualifiers for the adaptive? I'm kind of curious, like, based on what you've seen, even though you've only been an adaptive golfer for a couple of years and only played in a handful of events, even though you perform really well at them, where do you see this kind of adaptive golf landscape 3 or 5 years from now?
I would love to see, like I said, right now, it's mainly the state golf associations and the USGA that are having the big tournaments, the US Open being the largest. The US DGA, another acronym, Disabled Golfers Association, also has what I refer to as their equivalent of the PGA Championship in Florida in May. And that's a big 3-day tournament as well. So most of these
they actually hosted that at Laurel Hill in Lorton a few years ago.
Had
some of their competitors on the podcast. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So I think it's growing. You know, I played 2 weeks ago in the Chicago Adaptive Open, which is one of the only ones in the States that has a purse. But it's incredible what these golf associations are putting together in terms of the competitions and the build outs. And now it's getting more and more competitive to get into these adaptive tournaments, which is great. And European Tour, like I said, the DP World Tour partners with some events to have adaptive tournaments. And those adaptive tournaments are, for the most part, the top 10 players in the world that are invited. I know last year, the CJ Cup in Texas did something similar and invited the top 5 or 6 male players in the world and top 5 or 6 female players in the world and had an adaptive tournament the Monday and Tuesday before the CJ Cup. And I actually talked to the PGA Tour this winter and let them know I'm available if any of these tournaments are on the fence about having an adaptive tournament. I would love to coordinate or do anything I can to get more exposure. I would love to see in the next 5 years, to answer your questions, to have a similar setup as they have on the DP World Tour in terms of partnering with Adaptive Golf and getting us hosted at these awesome venues that are hosting PGA Tour events and maybe using the PGA Tour social medias and getting the word out there about adaptive golf, because the connotation is that maybe it's not as competitive as people would think, but the people playing are very good golfers, and it's going to be a lot of fun to see how it grows.
That's a big piece of why I'm excited to go out and watch some of the action at Woodmont next week. Is I attended a little bit of that USDGA event at Laurel Hill, but I have not been to an adaptive open in person yet. But watching these scores, like I said, you know, I chatted with Jack Bonifant a couple of years ago on the podcast. You know, he you know, he's a plus golfer, made the JMU golf team. You're a plus golfer. I mean, you guys are not, I mean, you guys can kick my ass in golf. I mean, I'm a 9 or 10 handicap. Like, I can't hang with you guys, and to watch you guys in real life, it's going to be awesome.
See.
Is there any chatter? Like, it seems like that kind of momentum where there's more of a partnership with some of the major tours, PGA Tour or otherwise, is only a matter of time. Is there any kind of chatter? You mentioned one of the events does have a purse.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see a scenario where there's almost becomes a professional circuit, or there's more money in it?
I think in a few years it's definitely possible. Right now, most of the players in all of these tournaments are paying their way to get to the tournament, to play, and to stay. Actually, this week, next week in the U.S. Open, for the first time, Deloitte is partnering with the USGA and doing player reimbursements up to $3,000 for travel and vacation. I mean, hotels and rental cars and all that. I definitely think there is more money going into the adaptive golf. And also, this year's final round at Woodmont on the South Course will be live on Golf Channel, which I think will be great. And we'll get a lot of people interested and maybe sponsors, I think, is the next step that we need.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
All right. What about, let's talk about the event specifically, like some strategy. I mean, like you said, this is a competitive event. You're T5 last year, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going out there to be T5 again. You're aiming to win this thing. You played the South Course, you said, a couple times already, but you played just recently on Monday. You know, what give me your thoughts on the course and some strategy and, you know, what some holes you like.
Absolutely. I'll start with, after playing in the tournaments last year, I realized I have a decade subscription. I always do my decade stats.
Nice.
And in these tournaments, for me to score better and to win more, I needed to get better on my wedge distance control. So I'm a junior member here and had at Congressional and had to write a big check when I turned 30. So my membership in Nashville is at PGA Tour Superstore. And I have been grinding on the wedge combines and getting my numbers right. Fortunate enough to have Titleist reach out at the beginning of this year and provide me with all new sticks, which have been great. So I've got my wedge gapping dialed in. And this week, it's been a great little training camp, being able to play and practice at Congressional. Woodmont South Course is very similar bent grass greens to the blue course at Congressional. So it's been very valuable to get up and be able to practice on those. But what I like most about the South course, I played for the first time Memorial Day weekend with a friend who's a member, and they were having the senior PGA Congressional. So I got over there, and the first thing I noticed is the green complexes and the bunkering and the undulations in the greens. It's pretty cool, pretty fantastic, which I feel benefits me. I'm like a little Spieth-like in that I like to be creative, and I don't like to, if it's a 30-yard pitch and not much going on the green, I have too many options. I end up overthinking it. But if there's a hill over here and some undulations and a way to get the ball to the hole on the ground, I feel like that's where I thrive and end up using my creativity. But also about the South course, which I really liked, is other than one hole on the back, number 13, it's pretty much driver everywhere on the par fours and par fives, which is my strength. I think the more times I can pull the driver, the more it benefits me. So just in comparison to last year, and in Kansas, I was hitting 3-iron off a lot of tees, and that was somewhat the course and somewhat me thinking I just had to hang around even. The Zoysia fairways at Woodmont are pure. It's like it's barely teed up every time. I think pulling driver as much as I can will benefit me. My caddy, Kevin, and I talked about it yesterday. There's a drivable, semi-drivable, depending on the wind, hole on the back, number 14. And we hit a tee shot with a 7-iron, then we hit one with a driver, and I got into the greenside bunker. And even if it's the hardest pin on the green, I think I'm going to hit a bunker shot closer than I would a 100-yard wedge shot. So I've been diving into my stats, following Scott Fawcett as much as I can. And I'm also stacking. I timed it up. So stack has been one of my favorite training aids in the past 2 years or so. I timed it up. So I finished a stack program this Saturday. And I feel like that helps not just with the driver, but with the sequencing for my swing. It's cool to be able to see what is adding or taking away from club head speed with what I'm doing with my body. So I feel like I'm in a good sweet spot with driver coming into form and the wedge distances being pretty dialed. It'll all come down to putting for me, and I've been working really hard on the putting as well. So we'll see how that goes. I have a little putting combine I do at home in Nashville, and it's funny. I've got a different course in public course in Nashville for every part of the game I want to work on. So I know which course has slightly better balls where I could go hit driver. I know which course has the best putting green where I can go and roll a couple true putts and short game and so on. So it's kind of helped my efficiency with practice as well. So I have to plan out ahead what I'm going to work on that day, what clubs I bring to work, and then show up and just knock out what I'm structured to work on that day.
The only Nashville Muni I think I know off the top of my head is it Ted Rhodes? Is that one of the
Ted Rhodes in North Nashville. That's a good spot.
Yeah. That also shows, I mean, you're hitting the ball 300 yards on the regular, because that I assuming you're playing it from the same tees on Monday on 14 where you put it on the greenside bunker. I thought I hit one perfect, and I was sitting 1 yard short of the bunker that was 40 yards from the green.
The cross bunker.
The cross bunker. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I thought I cleared that. I get up there and I'm sitting short of that. I'm like, oh my gosh.
It's just goes to say how well the redesign looks visually off the tee and into the greens. On some holes, it looks like you'll be short of the bunker, past the bunker. It looks like the pin can be on an island in a bunker. It's really cool to look at.
Yeah. I got asked on Monday, what did you shoot?
67.
It's par 71. Are you guys playing it as a par 71?
Well, I was 4 under, and the 7th hole at Woodmont on the South course is a par 4 for the members, downhill straight par 4, but we're playing it as a 5 for the US Open. So I either shot
a par
67 or a 68. Yeah.
Got it. Interesting. Very cool. Well, it's going to be a lot of fun. Do you guys get a couple more practice rounds over the weekend there?
Yeah, I'm trying to balance saving my legs for the tournament and playing as many practice rounds as possible. So I'm signed up for a practice round on Sunday and on Saturday, but I think I'll probably just go with the one on Sunday. My wife is actually she's pregnant due in October, and we're having a baby shower for her on Sunday. So I think I'd like to be out on the course during that baby shower.
Wow. Well, congratulations. This is your first?
Yes.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah, we're excited.
So that's soon. That's coming.
I know. And then my caddy, Kevin, his wife is pregnant due in September. So if you're out there at Woodmont, you see two pregnant ladies walking around. That's my wife and my caddy's wife.
But I also got to ask, being the shooting the scores that you do, obviously adaptive golf is a focus. But do you do any non-adaptive competitive golf?
I do. I tried to go to locals for US Open qualifying. I wanted to make it to Oakmont. I went to locals in Nashville, had an awful day, did not make it through. But I'm excited. I'm signed up for mid-am qualifying in August at a course in Kentucky, not too far from me. And it's just a balance of time for the adaptive golf and your regular competitive golf. I think playing any competitive golf will benefit the adaptive golf. I do feel like I can still compete when we're stretched out to the tips and playing in competitive golf events. But on the calendar right now, especially before this baby comes in October, the only other event I have on the calendar that's not adaptive is mid-am qualifying.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you nothing but the best of luck this week. I'll be out there at least one day. I might have to head out of town and miss the final round, but I'll get out there and I'll follow you for a few holes without a doubt. And I know you'll have a good local crowd here behind you cheering on the hometown kid.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Alex. Thanks so much for having me on. Enjoyed the conversation and thanks again for coming out. Appreciate it. Have a good one.